The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manassero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manassero, and this is the show where 50-plussers and anybody else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts, type in Old Dogs, spelled D-A-W-G-S, find our podcast and subscribe. Well, we got a great show for you today. We have a young man who is focused in the interesting area of opportunity zones. I'm talking about Ryan Scott. And Ryan grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, lived in San Francisco, North Carolina, San Diego, and Gilbert, Arizona. His father was a small cap CEO, and he idolized him. Rather than pursuing a career as a doctor, lawyer, or astronaut, Ryan grew up wanting to be someone who carried a briefcase and got dressed up for work, even if at the time he didn't know what he would be doing. He studied psych and econ as an undergrad at Davidson College in North Carolina before getting his finance MBA from Duke. His thesis was investing in short-term rental assets using creative financing. Ryan got started in real estate investing using little or no money down while working a full-time W-2 job. In 2012, while living in San Diego, he got interested in Airbnbs and got very involved setting up his own Airbnb business. As the market got saturated with Airbnbs, he eventually moved to Gilbert, Arizona, where he became intrigued by the power of opportunity zones. He saw huge potential and began to research. Eventually, he became an expert on opportunity zones and created Aspire Fund in 2018. Aspire Fund focuses on bringing affordable, attractive housing to Arizona regions. He quickly raised the first million and broke ground on Kachina Pines up in Flagstaff, Arizona in early 2019. Ryan now lives with his family in Gilbert, Arizona, with his wife, stepson, and twin girls. Well, Ryan, welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network.
Thanks for having me, Bill. Appreciate the intro.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. This is an area that a lot of folks want to know more about, especially in light of the current economy and COVID and so forth, that there's sort of a renewed interest in opportunity zones since they came on the scene, and want to hear more about that. But first, I thought, you know, we'd like to hear a little bit more about your background and, you know, kind of glanced over it there. Maybe you can kind of fill in the gaps and how you even got interested in real estate. Now, you're working full time currently, but you're not in the real estate area. Is that correct?
Yeah. So aspirations to kind of leave the IT consulting world and do real estate full time, but have found a way to do both that offer, you know, a nice balance. And so I've continued. I've been in IT consulting for 10 or 15 years. It's provided a real solid foundation for getting financing and all my real estate aspirations. And so here I am, maybe 10 or 15 years later, and I still do both full time, which obviously impinges on weekends and evenings, but we make it work.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. And it's kind of interesting, too, as you, studying, obviously, in school where you were a finance major, you've psych and econ, but moved into tech coming out of college. What sort of drew you into real estate?
Yeah, good question. Honestly, it was the rich dad, poor dad. I don't think I'm unique in that, but it was quite transformational for me. I was doing, I still do consulting where we're on the road all the time, and I was reading it on a plane while I was traveling from client to client. And I think just the change in viewpoint that it's quite difficult to get rich working for someone else. And that there are just significant incentives in American capitalism, right? The tax code and others that really just put real estate at an advantage, seriously at an advantage compared to a W-2, but even compared to other small business. And so I looked at it as something that the people I aspired to be were doing, and that the numbers were compelling enough, at least that I should learn more. Right. And that's where it started.
And it was unique in, at least in your bio here, you talk about starting off with learning little or no money down techniques to get started.
Sure. It's, out of being creative or really just necessity, right? I mean, I was very fortunate to not have any money in or the gumption to go in 07, 08. So I missed that, which was lucky. But even after that, when prices are cheaper, just didn't have a lot of cash. And so, you know, worked with another group, a network, you know, similar to yourself to get educated, worked with that group to kind of learn how to buy out of state. It was just single family homes, but using at the time, you know, we would fix them up a little bit and then refinance. And so it was getting in with, I believe it was $1,000 it ended up costing for some of them, because you had to pay the hard money loan point up front, but then we would use hard money and then refi out after the work was done in a couple months. So it was a little bit of a gamble on whether the refi would cover the full cost of the loan, but you know, it worked out for most that I was able to pick up four homes in Memphis when I was just starting out, and that was kind of where it started.
Oh, that's great. Now, did you buy them as rental properties or were these flips?
No, I bought them as rental properties. And the same group that helped with the fix up would then help put a tenant in as well, right? And the idea was kind of keep them long term, honestly, keep them in and have them pay for the kids' college was kind of the idea at the time. You know, with no money down, they didn't need to make much money every month, and it was still the right answer. And so I still have one.
Oh, okay. Got it. Okay, great. Then you're kind of shifted to, I guess you moved down to San Diego and started getting involved with Airbnb fairly early on, too. That was pretty new in the Airbnb, right? Around 2012?
It was, and, you know, somewhat similar to the Opportunity Zones, which we can talk about later. But, you know, if you're in early, it's a different ballgame, I guess, like any business. The smart money eventually finds its way there. And so, you know, back then in San Diego and everywhere else, there was just really, really good money to be made because there wasn't as much competition on Airbnb. It started to be one of the only places that, you know, was allowing people to rent out their condos in downtown. And so I got into it renting my condo out when I was traveling for work. And then really when I was trying to buy something in San Diego based on Rich Dad Poor Dad, I just wasn't willing to buy something that, you know, wasn't a good investment as well. And so that made it very difficult to find a place. And I'm sure, you know, that's people's experiences in a lot of markets. Where they want to live, it's not necessarily the same kind of rent to value ratio that maybe you're looking for when you're getting single family homes. And so as a result, had to start getting creative about maybe there's a different highest and best use for a property here that could, you know, make these expensive properties in San Diego pencil out. And that ended up being the answer, that it was actually a better idea to buy a much more expensive triplex by the beach rather than get, you know, try and find a home that was for myself that would actually be a decent investment. So that's what I did. And we got a triplex with some owner occupied financing and lived in the back, and, you know, eventually was able to make more money using Airbnb than some of the traditional property managers who really missed the boat, not embracing it. And so that kind of took off into its own little business locally for me there in San Diego. It was great.
That's awesome. Yeah, do you still do any Airbnb today, or are you full out of that?
So I don't in San Diego. When I moved to Arizona and got married, we sold those there and transitioned them here. I do have vacation rentals in Sedona and Scottsdale and some places, but I have somebody else manage them. I think the market is such that you really need to be all over it every day as your full-time job. And so that wasn't what I wanted to do. And so we brought in a professional to take care of them, and she does a great job.
Awesome. And what brought you to Arizona?
My wife. Yeah. The only reason to leave San Diego, I would say, for hot Arizona would be a woman. But so we were going back and forth between San Diego and Arizona, and eventually I got married and settled down here a couple years ago. But it's grown on me. It's August while we're talking here. September. It's pretty hot still.
Yeah, oh, I bet. Yeah, we had a heat wave here in Southern Cal too. It was just killer. Wow. Well, where is Gilbert exactly? What is it near?
It's a suburb of Scottsdale, Phoenix, maybe 15 minutes from Scottsdale south. It's a great little, you know, picket fence neighborhood. I never thought that's where I would end up at this age, but yeah, it's been great to settle down. We just had twins, and so.
Congratulations.
Quite happy. Yeah, thanks a lot. And you can certainly buy a lot more house here than in Southern California. So that's been a welcome change as we had to get a bigger one.
Oh, that's great. Now, tell me, you know, how you even got into opportunity zones from, you know, that kind of background. What sparked that interest?
So since the days of Rich Dad, I mean, he's got a lot of other books. There's some other CPA books. I've been into kind of using the tax code to its fullest, let's say. I think it benefits those who understand kind of how it works. And so I just looked at it as a fun game to master a little bit, that you would understand what the incentives were and you know, could benefit from that. And that's why they were made that way. So anyway, I'd been curious and then saw a headline, I think, on LinkedIn that somebody said, biggest tax break of a generation. And rare that I would click on a link, but I thought that was powerful. And, you know, this gentleman who runs his own fund went into the benefits, didn't seem gimmicky. It was based on an actual law. And so from there, you know, went to talk to him, looked into it further, thought about investing in other people's funds, or just making my own.
The Aspire Fund that you did start, what was really involved in starting a fund? I mean, what do you have to do? Is it something you set up through the SEC? What are the requirements for establishing a fund like that?
Yeah, so good question. I mean, I would say that the short answer is it's a much lower hurdle than you would probably imagine in terms of cost and filings and regulations, much lower. And then in reality, it's actually just not very much, right? So it is feasible to, rather than, you know, if you have gains that we can talk about that are relevant for a fund, it's not out of the question to just start your own rather than invest with someone else if that makes sense based on what you're trying to do anyway. And so you've got to set up a new business, set up the LLC. You have to have the operating agreement be written such that it supports what you're trying to do in an opportunity zone. But that's not onerous either. And then it's really a self-certification and, you know, potential retroactive audits to make sure you were operating as the fund should. So you got to have the entity set up, have the bank account through the entity, and then, you know, follow all the rules while you're operating as such.
And how do investors get paid until you, well, I see you purchased, it looks like a property or broke ground, your ground up construction. While you just have the fund, how do investors get paid or are they being paid?
Yeah, the short answer is they may get paid. I say they. I'm as big an investor in the fund as any of my investors. So we may get paid as we go, but really the way the opportunity zones were structured is that you're incentivized not to cash out and be paying money out. You're incentivized to leave that money in, put it to work, and then sell, have an exit event after 10 years. So, you know, as we're making cash flow on rentals, we'll potentially pay that out, potentially roll it back into the business. But if we sell something, we're generally not feeding that back to investors. We're reinvesting it with the goal of putting it into long-term investments that we can keep over 10 years and really capitalize on the main tax break in the program.
Okay, so it goes back into the fund for the most part, the equity or you know whatever if you can, when you cash out at that point, right?
Yeah, I mean, everyone would get paid out, you know, after the 10 years so that they could take advantage of, the waiving of capital gains. I will say, though, that it's likely that we'll distribute some cash around the time that we're all going to need to pay our capital gains, right? I mean, a big part of the program is that the money you put in, you get to defer paying taxes on that capital gain. So you had a gain from selling stock or selling a home, rather than a 1031 exchange, you put the gain into the fund. You don't have to pay taxes on that until the end of 2026, I think is when it is. And so around that time, everyone who's in the fund is probably going to be looking for cash. And so we may decide to distribute some money around that.
Gotcha. And tell me about Kachina Pines. Is it a multifamily? Is it single family homes? What exactly is that?
Yeah. So, it was a nice opportunity, sorry for the word, but to develop a piece of land that was previously seen as undevelopable, if that's even a word, just because of the upfront investment that it was going to take, that wasn't kind of the sexy cookie cutter development that others would have done. So we had a longer term view, and that's why I think we were able to make it happen. This one is small. It's an acre and a half. We split into 9 lots inside an existing suburb outside Flagstaff. And so we got more lots than any of the other developers were thinking they could do. We put in a whole sewer line, which is really a big investment that others didn't want to pay up front. And we've done a combination. So there's single family homes on half the lots. And then we've got a little tiny home community in the other half that I'll manage as vacation rentals. And so the tiny homes are just an area that I think are really, really, really trendy. They also make a lot of sense for this kind of development. It's out in the trees. And so we're going to keep those long term. And the market was just so good, we had to sell the single family homes and roll that money into a future project. So we ended up selling half, and we'll keep half as a tiny home, short term rental community long term.
Oh, that's interesting. That is really great. How many tiny homes are there?
So this, just because we didn't rezone, it's just one per lot. So they've got a lot of room on each lot. So it's four four tiny homes, but
gotcha.
Some of the other projects we're looking at a lot of density, right? And so you could really have a great project on a 10-acre parcel or 30-acre parcel. Put in a lot of affordable housing. So that's the idea.
And you had to look for land, obviously, that was qualified opportunity zone area, right, at these lots?
Exactly right. And it takes a little bit of getting used to it. You'll figure out what sort of tips and tricks are going to be helpful, whether it's with a broker who understands where the zones are, or, configure your own Redfin app that way. But you need to be operating in a census tract that was designated an opportunity zone.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. The only projects I've known about are existing buildings that were purchased, usually in inner city areas and so forth. That first time I've heard of raw land, which is great. That's it, to know that that's an option for folks too.
Yeah, I think it gets the most press around the urban areas, right? Because it's certainly a great, interesting story to revitalize a community. So nothing against that. We chose, even for that reason, to move a little bit out more rural, where there isn't as much competition from some of the huge funds. And those live in an urban area that are really only going to focus there. So we get a lot less competition. There's not even zones necessarily, zone funds competing for this land. Whereas you're starting to see downtown and in areas where it's an opportunity zone, that now the marketing is that, XYZ parcel is in an opportunity zone. The opportunities are this and that, right? And that just is going to change a lot for those areas. That means it's already been priced in. It's going to be very competitive. And so we chose to go out where there's plenty of space and not a lot of competition.
And so where are you looking, sort of your next project? Are you still in the Arizona area as well?
We are. Yeah. We see just a lot of benefit up there, to us and the community. So we're taking what's worked and expanding to potentially even go further north past Flagstaff, closer to the Grand Canyon, where there's just a lot of factors that are pushing people to want to downsize, to move out of urban areas, and obviously the tiny home is kind of a trendy thing right now. So we're looking at much larger projects where we're going to rezone from maybe something that was more kind of like ranch horse property, maybe just vacant general zoning, to something that's more conducive to a tiny home community, or maybe even manufactured homes up north.
That's a really interesting area for me. I love the tiny home area and concept. I don't know if you can answer this question or not, but what roughly do you think it would be the cost to just to build one tiny home?
Oh, I know it exactly. So,
okay.
For better or worse. So I do think that it can span based on who you're working with and what you want to achieve. So we work with a group, Unchartered Tiny Homes, and the guy Mike is very top of the line. Everything's custom done. You can make it more or less luxurious, but it's going to be high quality done. He can't do 50 at a time, and it's not just a guy in his backyard, right? So factory built by a pro. Ours, the four for this project, kind of ranged from, I think, $75,000 to $100,000 each. And, it could be 30 feet or as small as 20 feet. And there's just a lot of flexibility. They offer four or five different models that you can pick and choose and customize to your own detriment and make them very expensive, I guess. But I also follow, there's some other sites out there like Tiny Home Listings, where, I think there's just mom and pop folks who are building them, and I've seen them as low as 25, a lot around 40,000. So a lot of different price points. And now there's financing. That's
really, I didn't know that. Huh.
Yeah. It's going to be a little bit more expensive. And it's not a traditional route, but that's, I think, a big opportunity. It's just, that was such a hurdle for folks. So if you can get with somebody who's offering financing through the build, you're in good shape.
Yeah, that's, I would imagine it probably fall in the same category as manufactured homes in terms of the financing, I think.
Probably even closer to like RVs, honestly.
I mean, oh, wow.
With the manufactured homes, because we sold some of those in the first development, there's actually really good financing for the end buyer, right? So for us as the developer with the manufactured homes, yeah, it's quite difficult until you have it affixed to the ground and now it's just a regular home. So most of our buyers use FHA or VA or all sorts of programs and put very little down as an end buyer. That end buyer solid financing, though, can't really be used in the same way for a tiny home.
Got it.
Not yet, which makes sense. I mean, you could unhook them and roll them away. And so I think it's just a newer space, which, you know, we like. It's like being an Airbnb at the beginning.
Sure. Well, it's interesting. You really have had sort of a variety of different, you know, types of real estate investing here. And I'm just going to ask you encompass, you know, all of your experience there in the real estate realm. What would you say is maybe one of your biggest mistakes that you learned from, and maybe share, you know, what you learned from it for our listeners that, you know, may encounter similar situations?
Yeah, good question. So I think feeling like, once a property or a market has gone up some, that then means there's not more room for it to run, right? And so when we got into things in San Diego, got in at a decent time, and the properties you had went up, you know, 10-15%, which is a lot on a million dollar home, and just felt nervous about piling more into the market. So we kind of held firm and kept our three or four properties. Whereas, you know, the dynamics of the rent to the values continued to make sense, even if they had gone up, 20 or 25% more, became more expensive. And so I think some of that hesitation, same reason I'm irritated I didn't buy more Amazon stock as it was going up. I think just because something's had an okay run, that's not the best indication by any means that now that's going to turn around and it's going to come down. So it's easier in hindsight, and maybe it was a little bit more conservative, but you know, you're young and the rent really covered a lot of the expense there. And so I wish I would have taken some more risk and put some more capital to work than the properties we had.
Sure. And conversely, what would you say is sort of your biggest success in your real estate investing career?
Yeah. So I think in a similar vein, the first purchase there, right, which was a lot of money. It was like $1 million triplex. I was a younger person, even though the rent was going to cover that through the vacation rentals, it wasn't going to cover it by a lot. And so I think the appetite for risk right there and being able to look creatively to allow, you know, getting a larger property early, I really look back on and appreciate, even if it was a little bit by mistake, I think getting into something bigger earlier, if you can make it work without having some sort of disaster, just means that from then on, you know, it's going to continue to go bigger, right? So getting up to that plateau as early as possible was really helpful.
That's great. Well, our audience is made up primary. It's a mixed audience. Obviously, we have a lot of younger people listening as well as older, but our focus is really on those 50 years of age and older that are either approaching retirement or already in retirement, and they're looking at real estate investing as a means to supplement, help them to either grow their nest egg or maybe even start out in a way to create new forms of cash flow. What would you, you know, say to that group in terms of advice if you were, you know, in that same situation, what direction would you take in terms of real estate investing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think it depends on if somebody's wanting to start or, you know, maybe looking to reposition their portfolio. You know, top of mind for me just right now is opportunity zones, right? So just one comment about the opportunity zones is that I think there's a lot of folks who've done a good job to get into properties, roll those properties over with 1031 exchanges. But now may be at a point where there's a lot of equity stuck in a way inside those properties, right? Some of it is gain, but a lot of it may be initial investment. And you may be thinking a bit about, okay, in 10 years, could I unlock some of that gain in a way that I couldn't through a 1031 exchange, right? So I think that there are folks that are thinking about gains that are inherent in their stock portfolio or in their real estate portfolio, that potentially the zone is a way to unlock that. Because you can sell it and not pay the taxes and, you know, so on the other benefits. And then after 10 years, the money would come back to you. Whereas, of course, with the 1031, it won't, right? Until you die in a way. So I think that's one piece of advice, the same kind of advice that I would share with, you know, my younger brother's friends who have money in the stock market that's just gone up from all these tech companies where they work, right? You may want to access that gain, not want to do it because of taxes. This could give you a way out. So,
right. Great advice. So you've got, it's so interesting. You've got really two full-time jobs here and on your real estate front, where do you want to see that go? Sort of what's excites you about the future of what you're doing right now in real estate?
Sure. So part of it is it's exciting to learn new stuff, right? I mean, I thought that I would do Airbnb 24 hours a day for this and every life after this one. I was just so into it for a while. And now, you know, really taking a different approach, doing more thoughtful development projects, you know, initially just to make money, but then thinking about, okay, now we could change, you know, the landscape of affordable housing in an area. You know, we could do that on a decent sized scale. That's super exciting. I mean, I'll be honest, I got into all of the real estate simply so that I had flexibility to work or not work, right? I'm not even necessarily there yet, but that's the idea. To have now there be some value-based driver as well, it's great. So that's kind of the hope is to really make that happen.
Oh, that's great. Well, we're kind of zipping by here on the time, and we have this session that we ask you a series of quick questions. We call it Wrap It Up, sort of a lightning round type of segment that asks you resources that have been of value to you and share that with our listeners. So if you are ready, we can go ahead and wrap it up.
Let's do it.
All right. Favorite real estate book?
Yeah, got to stick with Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yeah, that was the one that moved me, I'll tell you. How about the favorite business book?
You know, there's a book by Mark Kohler, What Your CPA Isn't Telling You. It also has Lawyers Are Liars. I really enjoyed that book.
Great books. Awesome. How about most valuable website for success in the real estate realm?
So for me these days, there's some gentlemen who set up opportunitydb.com, I think is what it is. And it's really about helping you understand how the opportunity zones work, where they are, making it very easy to find them. They've got a podcast too. So yeah, those guys have done a good job.
Oh, that's cool. That's the first time I've heard that one. How about a favorite app on your phone that you use that helps you out?
I'm a big fan of Redfin. I really am. I think that it's super simple to use, even for land listings. I just find the user interface and the information that it gives really, really helpful. So, you know, personally, when I'm looking for, you know, personal investments or development projects.
Ah, great. How about a favorite quote?
Yeah, you know, I think if you can or you can't, you're right. I think it was Henry Ford. Others have said it was other folks too. But I think the mental game is really important. Looking back, I thought that I couldn't, and I was right, and thought that I could, and ended up being right too. So,
great. Final question here. If you lost everything, all your assets, and knowing what you currently know, if you only had $1,000 in cash, what would you do to relaunch your real estate investing business?
So, if it's relaunching, even so, I think I would probably use a significant portion of it to be taking people out to lunch who were in either a different portion of the field or in what I was trying to do and didn't do well if I had lost it all, and try and either build that into some recommendations for where to go next or some mentorship or something else, right? The $1,000 on its own, you know, is going to be hard to parlay. But those relationships, I think, could help you get there, right? You could find an investor and now the money's no longer an issue.
That's great. Great. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of folks listening that'd like to find out more about what you do. And if there's a way that you could help them out there, and a website or email, phone, whatever it may be, that you know, they might want to check out more into your fund or into, you know, some of the things that other areas you're in.
Sure, no worries. Happy to chat with anyone, right? Even just to kind of talk through ideas. Of course, if they want to invest, that's good too. So the website's aspirefund.co, aspirefund.co. You could get me at ryan@aspirefund.co.
Awesome. Great. Well, we have a tradition here. We are called the Old Dogs REI Network, and our guests always get the amazing privilege to be able to close us out with their best old hound dog howl. I don't know if you're ready for that, but it's the ball's in your court here.
Yeah, but surely not ready, but I've warned the family. Ow, ow!
All right, great. All right, Ryan, well, thank you so much for being on today. I think some great info that our listeners are really going to value from, so thank you.
Yeah, you got it, Bill. Appreciate it.
You bet. And I also want to thank all our old dog listeners out there for joining us. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we really appreciate it. Please note, everything that Ryan talked about today can be accessed in our detailed show notes on the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. You're going to look for the episode with Ryan Scott. Well, that's the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.